in the lair of the vampire. Lupin glanced up at the decaying corpse of a young pregnant woman, her mouth stretched open in a silent scream, a rapier-sharp stake jutting out through one eye. Honestly, this is a bit much, he thought crossly as he noticed two rows of fresher victims. He didn't have to add on more. The trek up the winding path to the castle was rather arduous, especially when plowing through knee-deep snow, and he was glad to arrive at the front doors, no matter how uninviting they appeared with their grim paintings of vampires carrying out various acts of horrific torture. "Hello, Barnabas," he said politely to the bald and bearded fellow who opened the doors, and Barnabas bowed and greeted him warmly.
"So, how many people has he killed today?"
Lupin inquired cheerfully.
"Only one, I believe," Barnabas responded gravely. "Thus far. May I have your cloak?"
"Definitely not,"
Lupin replied sternly and turned up the fur collar on the periwinkle blue silk cloak.
"This cloak's meant to keep me alive."
Barnabas smiled at him conspiratorially as they started their long walk through the rough stone corridors, passing by ignominious heaps of bodies in various states of decay, and a huge black candelabra spiked with heads mounted on the moldering greenish walls.
"Watch out,"
Lupin told Barnabas warningly as they turned a sharp corner into a pile of skeletons, and Barnabas skidded to a stop with a disgusted look on his face.
"I would have plowed right into that," he said accusingly. "You'd think he'd warn me when he's put something new up."
Lupin smiled at this. Unlike Radu's other servants, Barnabas appeared about as frightened of Radu's macabre displays as Lupin was. The next mile of corridors contained corpses swinging by ropes at eye level, so that any passerby was forced to physically move them aside.
"I'll get that," Barnabas scolded as Lupin politely held a body out of his way. "Honestly, it's getting tiresome," he grumbled. "I brought a fellow back yesterday, and he fainted right about at this spot. Had to carry him all the way back to the front door."
Barnabas paused in front of an intricately carved stone archway, with a massive black iron door behind it, and motioned for Lupin to proceed.
"You do look quite handsome in that cloak," he said appreciatively. "I don't suppose you..."
"No."
When Lupin entered the enormous dark room, he observed, as he always did, the glaring dichotomy that was Radu's residence. The walls presented a bleak and lifeless backdrop of clammy gray stone and mortar, boasting only one tiny circular window so close to the monstrous ceiling, its presence was completely useless, and an odor of decaying dampness hung like a shroud in the frigid air. Yet in the midst of this ancient, monolithic ruin was this library, a massive place that had been the original keep, infused with extravagant beauty and elegance. Exquisite silk tapestries of hand-painted watercolor hues hung from burnished bronze rods floating gracefully in the air, white and gold marble shelving that housed thousands of colossal, vividly shaded leather, silk, and velvet-bound books ran the length of a 500-foot wall, and the finest of antique furniture, permanently charmed into its original pristine condition, adorned a smoothly polished stone floor, scattered with gorgeously detailed hand-woven Persian and Turkish rugs. Radu, who was moving about noiselessly in front of his enormous bookcases, did not offer up a greeting.
"Mihai Eminescu," he announced abruptly as he pulled a massive red leather tome from the shelves. "I am thinking he derived much thought from Schopenhauer."
He spoke in his native Transylvanian dialect, an odd one that had died out 100 years ago, that he'd imagined he would never hear again. It had been a pleasant surprise to hear Lupin use it upon their first meeting, not that he would ever mention it. It was the language of his childhood, the one his mother had spoken to him.
"Can't as well, I'd say."
Lupin sat himself on the deep blue velvet chaise lounge, put his boots in front of the fire, and stretched out lazily with his feet on an oversized, multi-tasseled plush ottoman.
"I would agree. And what do you see?"
Radu continued in his deliberate manner as he glided over to an adjoining straight-back chair.
"Beneath the expression of feeling."
He placed the book on the long wooden table in front of the fireplace, apparently for Lupin's perusal, and folded his hands gracefully over a crossed leg. Radu's eyes, which were always intense, gave away absolutely nothing of what he might be feeling, nor did his expression, which was generally one of disdain. Looking at him, Lupin was reminded of an excerpt from the poet in discussion, a handsome dead man with live eyes.
"A mythological cosmology," he replied thoughtfully. "Subjective pantheism. I suppose a historical perspective as well, although you'd know better about that than I."
Radu nodded soberly.
Romania was, at that time, falling away from what he saw as a luxuriant Roman society. The Dacian, you know.
Liviu Radu was not as tall as most vampires, 6 feet and no more, and slender and pale to the point of translucence, with a perennially 16-year-old face and a sinfully epicene handsomeness, somewhat marred by its bleak and bitter countenance. He was immaculately dressed in the height of fashionable Romanian wizarding style, with a pleated white silk shirt ruffled in heavy lace, liberally sprinkled with tiny sapphires, its billowing sleeves tapering to large, heavily embroidered cuffs. A gossamer-thin red sash was draped elegantly around his neck, and curled down jade-colored velvet breeches to the buttery-soft calfskin of his square-toed, russet-brown boots, and a royal robe of deep gold mink topped off the ensemble, spilling into a pool behind him. A cascade of shining, near-waist-length ebony hair was secured at the base of his neck, in a clasp of mother-of-pearl and ivory stones, a few long pieces of hair falling artlessly across his eyes and face, an effect that Lupin suspected was purposefully recreated every few hours by some terrified barber.
"May I?"
Lupin indicated the fire, which had died down to a smolder, although he was quite sure Radu kept it that way.
"Of course," he replied dismissively. "I know that if you do not play with my fire, you will become very sullen indeed." "If I don't make fire, I can't see,"
Lupin responded agreeably.
"This place is dark as pitch." "Ah, but you can see in the dark, my friend,"
Radu answered complacently.
"Tell my constable that."
Lupin glanced at the fire, and it burst into a roaring blaze of companionable warmth. This much improved the ambience of the room, he thought, and felt even better when a dour-faced servant appeared with food and drink. An ornate Sheffield silver platter laden with two bottles of Poema Feti Niagara, a pair of black metal chalices, and a porcelain bowl containing Cozonac and Rahat was placed silently on the table, and the men departed without a word.
"Have you tried this?"
Radu indicated the wine contained in the traditional wizard bottle, shorter and much rounder than its muggle version.
"I don't think so." "Then you must,"
he replied decisively and poured a chalice full with his customary poise. Lupin inclined his head politely and picked up a square of the pale pink rahat as he sipped the wine.
"Are you trying to make me a wine connoisseur?" "It is not of the slightest consequence to me,"
Radu replied frigidly.
"That fellow, Cardier, you know,"
Lupin responded in an amiable tone,
"dragged me about for hours to a dozen different restaurants while he delivered impassioned lectures on Eastern European wines and bought about 50 bottles so I could try them all."
"He was trying to get you drunk,"
Radu told him sardonically.
"I'm certain he was. It was horrible. He kept leaning into my face and spraying me with his spit."
He shuddered.
"And did you learn anything from these lectures?"
his host inquired sternly.
"No, I wasn't listening to them. I wanted to kill him and go home."
"He did end up dead, so I suppose you got your wish,"
Radu shrugged.
"He was much too loud and full of his own words. I don't believe anyone misses him."
"I'm glad to hear it. And speaking of the dead, don't you think you have enough skewered bodies for your collection? I thought the new row was a bit much,"
Lupin added pleasantly.
"One can over-decorate, you know."
"Bloodvin's men are terrified,"
Radu answered flatly. This was the dark vampire who ruled wizarding Moldavia, and constantly aggravated Radu with attempted invasions and border skirmishes.
"Someone has started the rumor that I am possessed with the actual spirit of Vlad Dracula,"
Radu commented in his coolly self-satisfied manner.
"It has been most effective. And the freedom fighters have completely disbanded since their fearless leader departed in such dramatic fashion."
He narrowed his eyes meaningfully at Lupin when he said this.
"Where'd you get the bodies?"
Lupin responded, ignoring the look, although he knew Radu would get back to it later. Radu sighed. He seemed positively bored with this subject.
"The children from the orphanages. They just toss them out back. The adults, alleyways, hospital morgues, that sort of thing. I do like that cloak."
"That seems to be the popular opinion with women and gay men,"
Lupin replied genially.
"My heterosexual friends, however, are quite unmerciful in their comments. Especially the muggle one."
Radu made a slight grimace at this. Why anyone would even speak to a muggle was unfathomable to him, but Lupin was his guest, and he deemed it impolite to comment. For the moment, anyway.
"The look is rather Byronesque,"
Radu replied smoothly, and then, as was often his habit, abruptly changed the subject.
"Rookwood believes he has made the transition complete."
"I'd say he's right,"
Lupin said thoughtfully.
I don't think there is anyone in the Romanian government who isn't in league with the Death Eaters now, or too afraid to protest.
They are still telling the same story, Lupin looked disgusted.
Same line of shite they've been handing us for a month. You and your kind are the ones killing the Muggles and plotting wicked schemes against Britain. Are Rookwood and his camp going to bother you?
Tragically, no, Radu sighed. A battle on a grand scale would supply me with a delectable amount of fresh keel.
You really are a sick bastard, Lupin yawned. And I don't think you mean it. You're tired of this whole business.
Radu, who was always so still it was often difficult to detect if he was breathing, exhaled suddenly and threw his hands up in the air.
Your supposition is correct. These continual wars weary me, he pronounced angrily.
Is there anything that doesn't?
Lupin replied agreeably, and Radu shot him an aggrieved glance.
Very little, but nothing so much as you, he encountered irritably.
How do you find the vine? I like it. Bit of a black currant flavor. Very smooth.
Radu leaned forward with a self-satisfied expression.
And how is our mutual friend, Dmitri Lupescu?
You're never going to let that go, are you?
Lupin said wearily.
And he certainly isn't your friend.
You are insulting me, his host replied haughtily. That is why I continue to bring it up. I know you have him, and you know that I know.
Well, tell me how you know, then,
Lupin said pleasantly and took another piece of rahat.
Your ministry has given financial support to his freedom fighters,
Radu spat out these two words with venom,
since their inception. You have known him for years and are the sort that would come to his aid. And I highly doubt that he single-handedly killed five of my men while gravely wounded and then blasted out of my dungeon using fiend fire,
he finished triumphantly.
I am always to blame when anything is burned down by fiend fire,
Lupin responded with an angelic expression.
It's quite maddening. You'd think I was the only person in the world who could make it.
You are one of six, Radu snapped. The other four have no interest in Dmitri Lupescu, and the fifth is your great-great-grandfather.
Well, don't underestimate him,
Lupin replied genially.
But if he'd done it, he wouldn't have killed your men. He'd have shouted at them until they killed themselves. Anyway, if I did help Dmitri escape, I would hardly apologize for it. The freedom fighters only want what's their due, the right to choose who governs them.
In your opinion, Radu said coldly, something which is quite meaningless to me. One would think after enduring the regime of Cornelius Fudge, you might recognize the danger of peasants electing their leaders.
Spoken like a true despot, Lupin responded with good grace. Fine. You know I have him. Are you going to hunt him down?
Certainly not, Radu replied serenely. He is no threat to me. Keep him out of my country.
Shacklebolt might give him back to you for that chair,
Lupin told him slyly, and indicated a Louis XV corbeil-shaped bergère.
He's got his whole house done in French Renaissance.
Tell him I have an 18th-century Louis XIV beau bureau Mazarin in my dressing room, then,
Radu pronounced smugly.
He will give him to me for that.
I'll give him to you for that,
Lupin said cheerfully.
He is one ungrateful son of a bitch. Do you know he told me he'd rather dine with a feral wolf than with me?
Radu was predictably amused by this remark, and the corner of his mouth twitched impudently.
Indeed, he is most ungrateful, he said gravely, and I would gladly make such a deal with you. Yet I know you do not care about money.
My wife does, Lupin smiled. She likes to dress me. The more expensively, the better.
And why would she not?
Radu replied lazily and gave him a lingering glance.
I would dress you quite expensively myself.
I've no doubt you would,
Lupin responded amiably, reminding himself that Radu had at least not responded with his usual hostility to the words my wife or Elizabeth.
So, why did you kill your houseboy? You wish to change the subject,
Radu stated derisively.
I have no objection. I killed the houseboy because he was defiant and lazy.
Now you're killing people for laziness.
No, he snapped back. I would have disciplined him for that. He was openly defiant. I cannot tolerate it. And I do not know why I even respond to your questions. You are the most annoying person I have encountered in nearly 300 years,
he pronounced angrily and stalked back to his bookcases. Lupin was rather surprised by this.
I am,
he replied in a mystified tone.
And here I was, starting to like you.
I am a dictator, Radu said roughly, and not a benevolent one. You disapprove of everything I do. What could possibly make you say such a thing?
Lupin contemplated this for a moment.
Alistair Moody,
he replied finally,
once told me I would befriend the devil himself if he came knocking at my door, because I'd be certain there was good in him somewhere. Apparently, he was correct,
Radu pronounced flatly.
Well, this will make you dislike me even more,
Lupin responded genially.
But you aren't nearly as horrible as you'd like to be. You're certainly quite a nasty fellow,
he added reassuringly,
and arrogant to the point of disbelief, but I haven't found you to be a cold-hearted killer. You do what you believe is necessary, and what you call your code of honor is actually just your conscience.
Do not repeat that opinion,
Radu hissed threateningly and sat on the edge of his chair in a rigid and displeased fashion.
And why should I not be arrogant? I am the ruler of this country, a royal prince, a voivode. It is you who does not speak to me appropriately, and I have no idea why I permit it.
I'm perfectly polite to you,
Lupin replied coldly,
despite your innumerable insults and your continual rudeness. What you expect is deference.
You are correct,
Radu declared superciliously.
It's only my duel.
You think you're this superior?
Lupin said incredulously.
Of course I do,
Radu responded in an outraged voice.
And you will not use that tone with me. It is not appreciated.
I don't give a bloody fuck what you appreciate,
Lupin snarled back.
Did you create yourself by your own hand? A dull-witted peasant who lives his life in humility and thankfulness is your superior in my opinion. And yes, I know my opinion is meaningless to you,
he quoted back to him mockingly, and sat back in his chair with a defiant look.
Go for your wand then, you motherfucker, he thought furiously. We'll hash it out again.
Radu generally tried to kill him at least twice, although he had been cutting back lately, Lupin reminded himself grudgingly. He was surprised when Radu neither went for his wand, nor even replied, and broke the tense silence by addressing one of the servants lurking in the background.
Podría traerme un mes de pan y algo de chocolate? Y un café negro, porfa?
He asked politely, and the man nodded quickly and bustled off to the kitchen. Radu employed a host of men who spoke only one language, never a Slavic one, for the purpose of attending his guests, since they would understand nothing of the conversations held within the room.
"Have you not had lunch?"
he frowned at Lupin.
"No, and I didn't have breakfast either, because my wife's niece ate all the apples, and Neville spat out dandelion juice all over my eggs and black pudding,"
he finished crossly.
"I tell you, I'm starving."
"Well, please partake of my food,"
Radu responded in a voice heavily laced with sarcasm,
"before you continue informing me of my faults."
"I'm not insulting you," Lupin said wearily. "I do not minimize your position or your abilities. I merely stated you did not create yourself."
"Certainly an arguable fact,"
Radu replied coolly.
"I am a theist as well, although you might find that shocking, given your poor opinion of me."
There was a well-concealed edge of woundedness beneath the surface of this statement, and for a moment Lupin felt rather badly.
"I do not have a poor opinion of you,"
he told Radu firmly,
"and I appreciate your hospitality."
The servant reappeared with two heavy bread baskets, one containing naan, the leavened flatbread of Persia, and another stuffed with fat slices of rye, pumpkin, zucchini, and lemon poppy seed breads. A young boy scurried behind him, balancing a heavy olive-green French toll tray, overflowing with chocolate truffles, rum and raisin, caramel and coconut, and apricot liqueur, each on its own individually embroidered silk doily, and a third boy brought up the rear, carrying an enormous tankard of black coffee.
Excellente,
Lupin told the man enthusiastically, and he beamed and bowed about 15 times in rapid succession.
Mil gracias.
El placer es mío, don Lupin. Vivir para servirle,
he gushed and bowed himself backwards out of the room.
You're the most obsequious servants I've ever met,
he told his host cheerfully.
My muggle friend would love them. He can't seem to obtain the same results by shouting. Perhaps I've need to mention the killing bit. Apparently, it's more effective.
But of course,
Radu replied with an edge of triumph, apparently taking this as a compliment.
Now, while you are wolfing down your food, do not make a face like that at me. That is exactly what you are doing. I will tell you something you will like. When Draco Malfoy was making his inept political advances towards joining our forces, he committed the very basic blunder of telling me where he lived.
He gave Lupin an accusing look.
Well, don't blame me. I only taught him for a year.
Radu made a scornful sort of snorting noise, which Lupin decided was probably his form of laughter.
Draco is an arrogant idiot who listens to no one,
Radu replied irritably.
Anyway, in a peak of boredom, I made the journey to his house.
You mean you apparated yourself there in 2 seconds?
Please do not interrupt,
Radu said loftily.
I searched the premises and discovered something you will find of value.
He gave Lupin a sly look.
Ah, the dramatic pause,
Lupin remarked idly.
My wife's niece is quite expert with it.
As are you. When you're rattling off one of your incredibly tiresome and long-winded stories, I am reminded you should have had a career in theater.
That's what I told Salazar Slytherin's disembodied spirit,
Lupin replied affably, and Radu shot him a disgusted look.
Do not speak nonsense to me, he said shortly. I've no idea why you are not a homosexual. You are quite the drama queen.
Lupin smiled at this.
I give you my word of honor, he replied in an offended tone. It was in a skull in my muggle friend's attic, and homosexuals are not all drama queens. You're stereotyping yourself.
The pretty ones are,
Radu said dismissively.
Tell me the story, then.
I will not,
Lupin replied stubbornly.
You've insulted my storytelling. Besides, I want to know what you found at Draco's.
Radu's response to this was to glide around the room again, something which took at least 10 minutes, and then settle himself lazily upon his red velvet settee, where he yawned, took a long draught from his chalice of blood, and examined his fingers.
Quit fucking around, Lupin said impatiently. You're just trying to irritate me.
Radu raised an eyebrow.
True,
he replied with a satisfied look.
You will find it worth the annoyance, however, when I tell you what I have for you.
He took another draught from his chalice and gazed at one of his paintings, and Lupin gave him a defiant look.
Take all the time you want,
he said nastily.
I'm getting paid for this.
Ah, you wound me gravely, Remus,
Radu responded with a sigh.
You shall feel quite badly about your behavior when I tell you I discovered the Death Eater's files on every member of the Order of the Phoenix,
he finished triumphantly,
past and present.
Lupin started grinning like a Cheshire cat and leapt to his feet.
Holy shit! You're kidding me!
He shouted.
Do not bother attempting to restrain your enthusiasm,
Radu replied derisively.
Why should I?
Lupin said elatedly. Radu responded heatedly.
Perhaps we are very different, Remus, but I am no more likely to join the Death Eaters than you yourself. Here.
He pointed his wand to a corner of the room, and 40 piles of parchment, loosely bound by leather string, flew over and stacked themselves in 3 neat piles next to Lupin. I can't believe it, he thought gleefully. This is excellent. The Death Eaters would be at a great disadvantage without reference material on their enemies, and what they did remember from the files would now prove beneficial, as the Phoenix members, knowing what was expected of them in battle, could catch them off guard with something entirely different.
Liviu, he said seriously, I haven't any idea how to thank you. These could very well save the life of someone in the Order, and I know you could have bargained a great deal from the Ministry or the Death Eaters for these. You've also put yourself at risk should they discover what you've done.
Radu looked sourly into the fire and did not respond.
Don't glare at the fire, Lupin told him affably. I should have insinuated there was any kindness whatsoever lurking about in your 295-year-old stone-cold vampire heart. I apologize.
Radu glanced at him briefly, and one side of his face gave an imperceptible twitch. I think that's his smile, Lupin mused to himself. Very charismatic fellow.
You are extremely presumptuous,
Radu said coldly.
I am not always in the mood for humor.
You're never in the mood for humor,
Lupin replied genially.
Not that it matters to me, because I'm not afraid of you. And I think the fact that I don't guard every emotion I have, like everyone else who crosses your path with fear and trembling, is exactly why you keep inviting me back.
That, Radu replied sternly. And now the cloak, which you must wear again.
Are you joking with me?
He blurted out with an astonished expression.
I like to do so at least once a century, Radu replied austerely, to remind myself that I was once human.
You're still human,
Lupin responded argumentatively.
I will not have this quarrel with you today,
Radu said angrily.
Fine,
Lupin replied with a sigh.
I'm in your debt for these files. If you're ever in need of assistance, you must summon me.
Are you saying that if I'm chained up in a dungeon, you would kill my captors and blast me out with wind fire?
Radu countered disdainfully.
Certainly,
Lupin said cheerfully.
I do like an excuse to torch up a place.
He picked up the massive red leather book and flipped through the ornately illustrated, inscribed, and occasionally bejeweled pages of vellum.
Eminescu's collected works. Very nice,
he said approvingly.
Read me something, will you?
I don't read aloud to anyone,
Radu responded wrathfully.
You are the most unbelievably presumptuous person I have ever known. I cannot tolerate you.
Poetry is better heard than read,
Lupin said stubbornly. The blazing fire had cast more light than the castle had seen in over 200 years, Radu realized suddenly. The dark rug had melted to a rich red, the dull wooden table gleamed burnished bronze, and Lupin's hair was streaked with a dozen shades of reddish gold. The sun. I remember the sun. The sensation of happiness, 200 years forgotten, nearly overwhelmed him, and if his heart had been beating, he thought, it certainly would have stopped.
As you wish, he replied coolly. Then you will recount to me your histrionic tale of Salazar Slytherin's skull,
he added commandingly.
Agreed,
Lupin said willingly and settled himself back on the couch. He is right, Radu thought to himself furiously. I am still human.
We didn't do too bad,
Rosie said sympathetically as she and Teddy hurried along beside Elizabeth, who was pushing Annie's pram and looking upset. Elizabeth had invited her shopping to pick up a few things for the house, ostensibly so it would look nice for the order meeting. This did not, however, explain why they had spent the last hour in the ladies' loveliest footwear emporium.
Well, Elizabeth replied worriedly, he did say thank you and I told him I'd fix up the house for the meeting. That's because he thought you were going to clean up the house,
Teddy told her knowingly.
Not spend 122 galleons on buy shoes.
Be quiet, Rosie hissed at him. Let's go to Gringotts and I'll put some money in your account for those shoes. They can be a wedding present.
You already gave us a wedding present,
Elizabeth wailed.
You're not giving me any more money.
It's a present for him,
Rosie replied with a smirk as she walked purposefully up to the steps of the bank.
Besides, I want to see this place, she added loftily.
She changed this opinion immediately upon entering the bank. There didn't seem to be any sort of a queue, and elves, hags, warlocks, wizards, half-giants, and other assorted creatures were all pushing and shoving one another into an immense and deafening mob.
Now, Elizabeth hissed in her ear, if there's an elf in front of you, step on their foot. If there's a hag, pull a hair, but remember to duck, because I'll slap you. If it's a witch or wizard, say, coming through, like you're really important. And if it's a goblin, you just have to kick them.
Rosie gave her an astounded look.
It's just one of those things, Elizabeth said primly. You feel really rude at first, but if you don't, you get trampled.
You didn't step on my foot!
Shrieked an angry elf beside them at a towering hag, who promptly spat on him and knocked him to the ground.
That elf alone, I say! He's half your size!
Bellowed a stout wizard in purple velvet robes as he pointed his wand at the hag.
Don't you point your wand at me!
Screamed the hag, and suddenly the entire crowd erupted into bedlam, shouting, pushing, hitting, slapping, and screaming spells at one another.
Quick! Elizabeth told Teddy hastily. Get Annie out of here!
Teddy grabbed the pram and sped off through the crowd, running over toes and shouting he would blast everyone to pieces. Apparently he'd been inculcated on bank protocol as well, and Rosie and Elizabeth tried unsuccessfully to push their way through the jostling throng of creatures.
Hang on!
Elizabeth yelled desperately and grabbed Rosie's hand.
Ow!
Rosie squealed as someone's elbow caught her in the side of the face.
We're gonna get trampled! We're gonna die! Avada Kedavra!
Elizabeth shouted, and everyone in their vicinity hit the ground at once. The two of them hurriedly marched over the cowering bodies and down the steps, stopping in the street to exchange triumphant looks.
That was a great idea,
Rosie said admiringly, and Elizabeth looked pleased with herself. Her moment of self-satisfaction was short-lived, however, when a distinctive cackling sound wafted up behind them.
Hey, dudes!
Kenny yelped delightedly as he sprang into view.
Man, it's like that wizard bank, dude!
What are you doing here?
Rosie squealed angrily.
How in the hell did you get here?
Man, Teddy went to that bookstore and used the flu, dude,
he replied knowingly. He took Annie to Solange, man, and told her you and Elizabeth started a riot at the bank,
he added with satisfaction.
We did not, Elizabeth screeched. Why did he tell her that? She's going to freak out.
She did freak out, dude,
Kenny responded gleefully.
She totally freaked out, and so did Quentin, man. He said you were leading Rosie into a life of crime, dude.
I am not, Elizabeth responded in an outraged voice. Teddy jumped in the fireplace, and I grabbed his sleeve, man. That's how I got here.
Kenny finished blissfully and popped a few pills in his mouth.
Oh! Elizabeth shouted passionately. Where's Teddy?
He knew you'd be mad, dude.
Kenny nodded.
That's why he's hiding out, man.
Hiding out where?
Elizabeth demanded.
I'm not telling, dude,
Kenny replied stubbornly.
He said if I didn't, he'd give me one of those lollipops from George's store.
Teddy is in big trouble,
Elizabeth yelled furiously. A frantic look suddenly crossed her features.
What if he went down Nocturne Alley, she wailed. What if somebody kidnapped him? What if Remus comes home and finds out Teddy's dead?
I'll be totally pissed at you, that's what, dude,
Kenny told her unsympathetically.
He'll never forgive you. He'll divorce your ass, dude,
he added knowingly.
Even though you're not really married, man.
Elizabeth burst into tears, and Rosie slapped Kenny across the face.
That hurt,
Kenny howled angrily.
It's not my fault her kid's dead, dude.
He isn't dead,
Rosie screeched as Elizabeth began bawling loudly.
I bet he is, Kenny replied loftily. I bet somebody kidnapped him and tortured him, man,
he finished in a satisfied voice.
Don't listen to him, Rosie told Elizabeth furiously and grabbed her by the hand. Come on, we're going to George's store.
Somebody's got to help me with these two, she thought irritably. The front door of Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes jangled out a circus-like tune as Rosie blundered in, dragging the bawling Elizabeth behind her, and George hurried over from the counter with a concerned expression.
Elizabeth, he said worriedly as Kenny darted in behind them, what's going on?
Teddy's hiding somewhere, Rosie told George fretfully, and Kenny's telling her he's dead and she's freaking out. And we can't find Teddy and Kenny won't go home, she wailed dramatically.
Where's those lollipops, dude?
Kenny asked interestedly, and George gave him a frightful look.
Elizabeth, he's fine, he said reassuringly. Teddy's run this street his whole life. Everybody knows him.
Elizabeth blew her nose into his preferred handkerchief and flushed.
Well, I guess, she sniffed. I know I'm acting stupid and embarrassing. I'm just worried, and Kenny isn't helping.
You aren't being stupid or embarrassing, George said heatedly. I'll find Teddy, and then I'll kill Kenny,
he added matter-of-factly, and Kenny let out a shriek of fright.
Watch the store, will you? He called over his shoulder to Rosie as he and Elizabeth hurried out the door. The girls won't break.
Kenny watched them leave, and then, apparently forgetting George's declaration, sprinted right after them.
What do you mean, watch the store?
Rosie wailed as the door closed behind him.
I don't know how to watch the store.
By 5 o'clock, George and Elizabeth, shadowed by a skulking Kenny, had searched every store in Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade without success. And when they sat down on the bench across from the Hogshead, Elizabeth began crying again.
I'm so scared, she bawled. Where is he? Where is he?
He's got to be on Nocturne Alley, George said soothingly. Wait in the three broomsticks and I'll go get him.
I'm going with you,
Elizabeth pronounced determinedly.
Yeah, me too, dude, Kenny announced happily. You know, you might need some help with those bad guys, man,
he told George knowingly. They had no sooner turned the corner than a very hairy, foul-smelling man with abnormally long arms and a black hooded cloak leapt out at them.
Give me a break, George barked out disgustedly. You're always jumping out of the same corner. Can't you ever go anywhere else?
Give me your money,
the man yelled threateningly and pointed his wand at George, and you won't get hurt.
Oh my God, George shouted incredulously. You say the same shite every time, and you never get anybody's money, he added irritably.
Do you hear me?
The man screamed and shoved his wand up into George's nose.
I said give me your money, and maybe you won't get hurt.
Suck my dick, George replied in a bored voice.
We're looking for a little kid about this tall, hair that turns colors.
Yeah, I seen that young fella,
the man replied solemnly. Come by here and kick me in the leg,
he added darkly.
You're the worst robber in the whole world, man, Kenny told the fellow sympathetically. You might as well give it up now, dude.
Where's the kid? George said impatiently.
In me arse,
the man replied resentfully.
Down at Ancient Evil Antiques, I mean to say,
he added quickly when George went for his sword.
This street is awesome,
Kenny shouted ecstatically as they hurried down the street, passing a huge cyclops wearing only a loincloth, three banshees carrying buckets of yellow rats, a drunken group of disfigured men, and a chattering band of oversized monkeys who were tossing a shrunken head back and forth. The door of most ancient and terrifyingly evil antiques let out a petrified, high-pitched scream as the three hurried into a gloomy room full of frightening-looking objects and even ghastlier-appearing customers.
Teddy!
Elizabeth yelled out desperately.
Teddy!
Several scarred and gruesome men quickly lumbered towards her, and George put his hand on his sword hilt.
Leave her alone, or I'll cut off your heads, he told them pleasantly. There's a little kid in here. Where is he?
One of the men looked over and spat on the ground.
That's George Weasley, he proclaimed dourly, and the others all began talking at once. Perry's dragged him in the back. Figures he'd get a lot of reward money from him. The kid was screaming like crazy. Perry's got that temper, he does. Better kill him by now.
George tore off down the back hall with Elizabeth racing behind, and Kenny sat down on the floor and perused the store with interest.
Cool, dude,
he said gleefully to a grotesquely visaged one-armed giant.
Check it out, man!
He pointed excitedly around the room at shelves lined with poisonous candles, crates of human bones, jars of decaying greenish fingernails, a display case of cursed necklaces, boxes crammed with claws, daggers, and hissing snakes, and finally snatched up a dirty jar labeled Most Potent Hag Hair Detangler.
Hair stuff, man. Chicks totally dig hair stuff, dude,
Kenny told the giant sagely.
I'm taking this for my girlfriend, man. I'm gonna shag her when I get my dick back tonight, dude. It'll be the best shag she's ever had.
Elizabeth thought she had ever been so frightened in her entire life as the corridor stretched into some slow-motion nightmare, visions of Teddy screaming in agony or lying lifeless and mutilated flashing through her head. When they reached a massive red door, Elizabeth said a frantic prayer as George kicked it open. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, let him be all right. Teddy! George bellowed. Teddy! Teddy, where are... His voice broke off abruptly. Two grizzled men that looked as if they'd escaped Azkaban that very morning were curled up on the floor, bound together with silver cords, and Teddy was sitting on top of them, calmly eating a sandwich.
Teddy! Elizabeth screeched. Oh, why'd you have to scare me to death?
I'm gonna kill you, George told him agreeably. You're one dead kid.
That little bastard grabbed me
one of the men yelled angrily,
and tied us up with some silver cords you conjured up. How are you learning to do that?
He screamed accusingly.
My dad taught me,
Teddy sniffed irritably.
In case he ever got loose when he was a werewolf, he made me practice for 6 months.
Your dad's a werewolf? Bloody shite,
the older of the men blurted out.
You can tell us that. I hate a werewolf.
Elizabeth kicked him with the pointed toe of her boot, and George burst out laughing.
You are totally up the ass screwed, he told the two men gleefully. This is Remus Lupin's kid. You better hope he kills you quick.
We're sorry, the men yelled frantically. We didn't hurt you, kid.
You didn't hurt me,
Teddy replied sanctimoniously.
But you were going to hurt me. You picked up that knife and said you were going to slit my gullet open,
he said vociferously.
That's why I tied you up. What's a gullet, George?
Something you want to be sure and tell your dad these fellows were going to slit open, George replied cheerfully. This will be outstanding.
Please, the men screamed desperately. Please don't tell him, kid. We're awful sorry. Teddy gave them a sympathetic look.
I won't tell if you write me some sentences,
he informed them loftily.
Do you know how to write?
I do,
one of the men hollered.
Good,
Teddy responded stubbornly.
You write, it is really rude and mean to kidnap somebody and slit their gullet open. Write it 9,000 times,
he added sternly.
And if I don't get it by the end of next week, I'm telling my dad.
You'll get it tomorrow, kid, the man replied hastily.
I wish he'd come back and fix this pantry,
Lucretia grumbled darkly as she bustled around the kitchen.
I can't get to nothing.
The other kitchen servants were giving the exploded pantry, and Lucretia herself a wide berth.
I'm scared of this place,
Shalonda shrieked and began blubbering loudly.
Scared? Look at that pantry. People blow things up all the time.
You hush yourself up,
Lucretia snapped unsympathetically. Shalonda was her younger cousin, a stately woman with an impressive figure for a woman of 50, rather offset by a horse-shaped face, large gold front tooth, and orange hair with magenta highlights.
And you better not keep going after Mr. Richard,
Lucretia told her sternly.
Miss Caroline, she mean like a snake. She'd get you fired, uh-huh, she sure would,
she nodded knowingly.
She hide something in your stuff and then act like you stole it. That's exactly what she do. That's how white folks does us,
she added threateningly and snatched up a platter of glazed ham.
They always sneaky, don't trust us. Always think the worst,
she groused as if this predicted chicanery on Caroline's part had already occurred.
And that's thanks, I guess, out to 35 years of dedicated service,
she shouted as she slammed the platter in front of Quentin.
What?
Quentin yelled and threw down his paper.
What the hell was that about?
He barked at Jamie, who just shrugged.
I say,
his grandfather bellowed as Reginald's mummified corpse sailed into the room in its festively decorated wheelchair, circling the ceiling at a rapid rate.
When is that thing getting out of here?
He's not, Jamie replied knowingly. George charmed him, so if Lupin's in the room, Reginald will apparate somewhere else. And he doesn't show up on the Marauder's map of the house because he's dead, and Lupin can't track him since he's enchanted to smell like something different every day, he finished enthusiastically. I think it's genius. George is brilliant. He dug back into his steamed vegetables with relish.
Oh, dead man!
Natalie hollered happily as she stood on her chair and waved at Reginald, who seemed to be picking up speed.
Come down!
Nicholas instructed him bossily.
Come down here, dead man!
By this time, Reginald was practically whizzing around the ceiling.
Can't anyone make this George fellow behave?
Richard hollered loudly.
I thought you'd read the books, Grandfather,
Jamie replied smugly.
Well, I say, that thing frightened my valet, and he's going awfully fast,
Reginald was a blur of motion now. "Lupin's rising up for the Charms Chronicle," Jamie continued, apparently unconcerned with Reginald's speed. "He thinks it's totally impressive, too, and George should win a prize. Think about this yearly award called Most Frighteningly Creative and Dreadfully Impressive Use of Charm Spell. It's very prestigious," he added decisively. "What?" Quentin shouted. "I've got a motherfucking corpse flying around my damn house, and that bloody werewolf thinks it deserves a prize!" "Yep," Jamie told him cheerfully. "Gryffindors are really into prizes and awards and stuff. Ginny told me. She knows."
"Hey, dudes!"
Kenny screamed ecstatically as he leapt into the room and made a sliding stop in front of his chair, a black leather Bible clutched possessively in his arms.
"Guess what?"
"Nobody wants to know,"
Henry replied rudely.
"I got my dick back! I got my dick back!"
he cackled and broke into a stumbling sort of dance.
"It just showed up in my pants, dude! And I guess he felt bad for what he did, man, 'cause he made it even bigger! I love him, man!"
he said worshipfully. "Shut the fuck up," Quentin yelled threateningly. "We're trying to eat here. Nobody gives a shit about your damn dick!"
"Hey! Super old dead dude!"
Kenny screeched blissfully up at Reginald.
"I got my dick back, man! And I went to Nocturne Alley and I made a new wizard friend, super old dead dude! Come on out here, man!"
Everyone except Henry looked rather startled when an unkempt young man with a battered green top hat, long dirty black curls covering most of his grimy face and torn clothing, slouched into the room.
"Robbie Maloney,"
the man said in a surly voice and inclined his head towards Quentin.
"Is that himself?" "Yeah, that's him, dude,"
Kenny hissed loudly.
"Don't piss him off, man, or he'll beat you up and throw you out, dude."
"He doesn't live here," Quentin snapped back. "Why the fuck would I be throwing him out?" Neither Kenny nor Robbie responded to this query.
"I said he doesn't live here,"
Quentin repeated ominously.
"Yeah, he does, man,"
Kenny replied sulkily.
"He does, dude. I asked him to move in, man. He's trying to give up his life of crime and go straight, dude. Don't you want to help him out?"
"No," Quentin replied immediately. "Get the fuck out."
"Quentin,"
Solange whispered as she scooted herself so close to him, one of her breasts rested on his arm.
"Maybe you should let him stay. If Kenny has a new friend, he'll quit hanging around with Jamie. I bet he won't even go to Oxford with him anymore."
Solange was constantly fretting that Kenny was going to turn Jamie into a drug addict.
"Sure,"
Quentin blurted out, since his mind had gone completely blank. Rosie wrinkled up her nose and gave her mother a baffled look.
"Elizabeth said that guy tried to rob her and George on Nocturne Alley,"
she told her father with a sniff.
"Well, they left me at that store with all those little brats,"
she finished angrily.
"I didn't rob nobody, miss,"
Robbie blurted out frantically.
"I've been taking the dog's abuse and nothing to show for it. I've not stolen loot."
"Yeah,"
Kenny nodded emphatically.
"That's probably true, man."
"Well, we could use a wizard round here," Quentin replied pleasantly as Solange kept smiling at him. "Can you vanish that thing?"
he asked politely and gestured towards Reginald.
"He's our corpse of Christmas cheer. The holiday's over, though. At least put him in the attic."
"Whatever you say, sir,"
Robbie replied respectively and tipped his hat.
What's the old one's name?"
he whispered to Kenny.
"Super old dead dude,"
Kenny hissed back.
"Accio! Super old dead dude!"
Robbie hollered triumphantly, and the front doors blew open with a blast, sending dozens of elderly men in suits spitting through the doorway at a rapid-fire pace.
"It's raining men!" Lady Fanshawe squealed, pointing a bony finger in the air as if preparing to disco dance. "Lucretia!" she trilled happily. "Bring out the extra table! Set some extra places!"
Lucretia stuck her head out in the doorway.
"How many extra places?" she snapped. "I ain't got enough food for—"
she stopped talking.
"Oh-wee!" she screeched excitedly. "This room full of mans! Full of mans! They all old, but some of them handsome! You may have the black ones," Lady Fanshawe announced haughtily. "And the ones without a title. You got yourself a deal, sister!"
Lucretia shouted back eagerly.
"Shalanda, get out here, you old hussy!"
"Better take another look," Jamie told his grandmother with a smirk as the men tumbled into a limp pile on the floor of the great room. "There's a reason they're all wearing suits."
He looked at Rosie and they both burst out laughing.
"They're dead!"
Slosh squealed excitedly and burst into a gale of giggles.
"Go pick out your new boyfriend, mother!"
Richard chuckled loudly and kept eating his glazed ham. Maybe I can't blame everything about Tim on Sirius, Quentin thought to himself wryly, but decided he didn't particularly care. Solange looked happier than she had in months, and most importantly, her boob was still resting on his arm.
Awesome, man!
Kenny shrieked.
Awesome! Look at all those super old dead dudes, man!
Ah! Shalonda screamed hysterically.
I'm getting out of this place!
She flung her apron over her head for protection and ran right out the front door.
Well, I never! Lucretia huffed furiously. You're right, they is dead. And some of them been dead a long time. They ain't looking too good, she proclaimed ominously.
Look!
Natalie yelped happily.
Them moving!
The bodies began slowly levitating towards the ceiling, where they formed a bizarre-looking queue, the ashen corpses hanging limply like puppets from invisible strings as they circled behind Reginald. Robbie got up and hurried out of the room.
Oh, I feel so much better,
Solange whispered conspiratorially to Quentin.
I've been taking this antidepressant, and I feel so much better. I'm so glad Elizabeth made me go to her doctor,
she nodded happily.
He's incredibly nice. I have to go for a follow-up, and you should come with me.
Am I her best girlfriend now, or what? Quentin wondered briefly, but decided he wasn't arguing with opportunity thrown into his lap.
Hey!
Kenny wailed piteously at Lucretia, apparently already bored with the super old dead dudes.
I want to learn about Jesus, Lucretia. I brought my Bible.
That is my Bible, Park shouted angrily. You went in my quarters and stole my Bible.
No, I didn't, dude, Kenny whined. You're lying, man. You're a big fat liar, dude.
It has my name embossed right there on the front.
You stole an old man's Bible so you could trick somebody into shagging you? Henry yelled incredulously. Don't you have any respect for anything?
Parks tried to snatch the Bible out of his hands, but Kenny held on stubbornly, and the Bible tore in half.
I respect my dick, dude,
Kenny told Henry sullenly. There was a gasp of shock from around the room.
My dead wife gave me that Bible!
Parks bellowed and punched Kenny right in the face.
Oh, you're the baddest,
Nicholas told Kenny delightedly.
You're really big trouble with God.
Everyone laughed at this.
This is not funny,
Parks shouted wrathfully. From now on, I am eating at this table.
Someone needs to make these people behave themselves properly,
he snarled ominously at Quentin.
Please do, Quentin replied hastily. I've told you that before.
Hmm, Lucretia swayed her hips in a threatening manner. That's how it be then. He a servant too, but he a white servant. That's how they does us, she added to no one in particular.
Apparently, she was still upset about the incident that had never happened.
Well, you're welcome to eat here as well, Quentin told her affably. There's no reason why you have to serve. Sit out here.
And you can sit by me, man, and teach me about Jesus, dude,
Kenny cackled merrily.
You ain't interested in Jesus,
Lucretia shouted back.
How am I going to learn about God, man,
Kenny wailed piteously, when nobody will tell me?
Well,
she huffed as she made her way down to the end of the table with a frightful scowl.
I guess it's my duty as a Christian woman. Ain't nobody else Keel gonna tell Kenny about Jesus.
I did, Shala spluttered out angrily. I told him once he should get saved and maybe God would help him get off drugs.
I'll bet that changed his life,
Henry commented impertinently.
He threw his iced tea at me, Shala replied furiously. We should go away for a while,
Solange hissed conspiratorially to Quentin,
and go on a castle tour.
Castle tour? Quentin replied with a puzzled expression.
Yes!
Solange screeched and clapped her hands.
Thank you, I'd love to go.
Apparently, Quentin thought he had just invited her somewhere.
Where shall we take this tour, then?
He said dispassionately.
Anyway, you won't, Solange told him happily. You should decide.
We need to say a prayer, man, before we eat,
Kenny intoned loudly.
Somebody needs to say a prayer for your soul, Henry responded rudely, since it's double damned to hell.
Let's read the Bible together, dude, after dinner,
Kenny hollered as Lucretia sat down beside him with an unimpressed expression.
And listen to gospel music, man. I love gospel music.
You listen to gangster rap,
Henry said irritably.
It's Christian gangster rap, man,
Kenny informed him piously.
It's Christian gangsters for Jesus, dude.
Henry got up and left the table. The servants were hastily clearing away the dinner dishes when Lupin appeared in the room and Reginald promptly disapparated with a bang, leaving the other old dead men to tumble helplessly to the floor.
Thanks for coming, Quentin said cheerfully. I hope you weren't busy.
I've got 15 minutes for the order meeting, Lupin replied amiably and gazed up at the ceiling. You don't care what I do with them, I suppose.
What do you do with them? Quentin replied in an incredulous voice, and Solange giggled.
Well,
Lupin began in a reasonable tone as he lined the corpses in a row with a wave of his hand.
Most of them have been dead for a while, but those fellows there, he pointed with his wand, are pretty fresh.
You're beginning to frighten me, Quentin responded matter-of-factly.
They aren't for me, Lupin said disgustedly. Do you think Elizabeth would let me bring these fuckers home? Anyway, I've seen enough dead people for 12 lifetimes. They're for a friend of mine.
I always thought your friends were rather odd, Quentin commented impassively.
It isn't anybody you know, Lupin said calmly. It's a thank you to this fellow who invited me to stay at his castle the next few days while I'm spying on the Romanian minister. So I don't have to stay in the cave, you know. He's a bit of a weird fellow,
he added apologetically. Please, Quentin responded pleasantly. Send him whatever you want. And for God's sake, don't tell us why.
Thanks,
Lupin replied cheerfully, and he and the bodies vanished.
What do you think his friend is going to do with them?
Solange asked with an impish expression. I have a suspicion, Quentin responded dryly, but I'd rather not dwell on it. What am I supposed to do with these new ones? Barnabas said crossly to Radu, who was stretched out rather sullenly in front of his fireplace, smoking a very long pipe that emitted curling wisps of dark red smoke. It was only because they were alone in the room, and Barnabas had worked for Radu for 50 years, making him the longest surviving servant, that he dared use this tone.
What new ones? Radu replied sharply. Quit speaking nonsense.
The new bodies, Barnabas said impatiently. Your Majesty, he added quickly, there are 10 new bodies at the front door, and no one brought them. Radu got up with an interested look, just as the Spanish-speaking servant hurried in and thrust him a parchment, and Barnabas wandered a few feet away but watched Radu surreptitiously.
They are from that British werewolf, Radu told Barnabas coolly, as if he couldn't remember Lupin's name.
That was very kind of him, Barnabas said smoothly, especially considering you refused to have him back again.
I changed my mind, Radu replied haughtily. I find your company extremely tedious. And an alliance with Wizarding Britain is in our best interest, he added scornfully. But you know I cannot tolerate Shacklebolt. He's incredibly arrogant. I cannot bear it.
Barnabas kept a straight face, with much difficulty at this.
Well, I have been here 50 years, he responded pleasantly. If your lordship is tired of me, perhaps I should go elsewhere.
You will not, Radu told him threateningly. I will hunt you down and kill you. You are the only person in this castle I trust,
Barnabas sighed.
I cannot disagree with you, he replied gloomily. If you will allow me to be so bold, however, it does take several decades for one to become fond of you.
Radu frowned at him.
Go get my dressing gown, he said impatiently. The violet silk. And the fault is quite obviously yours. The British werewolf has known me a month, and he is sending me gifts.
He gave Barnabas a self-satisfied look.
He's sending you dead people, Barnabas remarked casually. And do not misinterpret it. He is not gay.
Do not tell me what I obviously know, Radu snapped at him. I cannot tolerate your impertinence. I have no idea why I do not kill you. Get my dressing gown.
Barnabas turned away and smiled to himself, and Radu glanced down at the note again.
Live you, just in case you want a midnight snack or something. See you tomorrow, Remus.
The Order members had scarcely taken their places when Lupin motioned impatiently at Hermione, who was the secretary, to go through the notes of the last meeting.
We're all there, George announced loudly. Do you have to hear it all again?
Luna, who was always late, drifted in with a blissful expression on her face and an enormous blue radish clutched in her arms.
Here, I saved you a seat, Neville told her quickly.
Do you like her now or something?
Jenny blurted out tactlessly. I think she's the least likely to kill me, Neville thought to himself.
Well, she's always late, he replied agreeably. Somebody ought to save her a seat. She always ends up in the back.
Thank you, Neville,
Luna beamed happily.
Dung, Neville called out in a friendly voice. Serve here by me.
I haven't talked to you in ages.
Mundunga slithered over, looking quite suspicious.
He stinks,
Ginny blurted out rudely.
Why'd you tell him to sit there? Now he's across from me.
Because he definitely can't kill me, that's why.
Nobody ever asked him to sit by them.
I'm being polite,
Neville replied loftily, and Ginny gave him a withering glare.
You are not,
she said stubbornly.
Don't be getting into me, Lucy Lockets, now,
Mundunga grumbled with another accusatory look at Neville.
I ain't nothing in there you'd want.
Not getting in your pockets, Neville said in an outraged voice. And you do stink. Can't you ever take a bath? The Nuggets ignored this and looked up at Lupin.
Where's the little bison and gravy, then?
He said with interest.
She's in the Uncle Ted,
Lupin replied in a mocking cockney voice.
You're not holding her anyway. At least not until you bathe.
Yeah, the bloke want me to fit in with the bloody Joe Rooks,
he responded angrily.
Think they're in a pub every last day.
I think feral wolves bathe more often than you do,
Lupin said rudely. Anyway, George is right. We'll skip the minutes. Everyone sat up in their chairs. What's going on? Harry demanded.
Take a look at these,
Lupin replied exultantly, as he pointed his wand at a stack of loosely tied parchments in the corner that promptly arranged themselves on the table in front of each member. What's this? Ron said peevishly as he started flipping through the pages. Notes have been taken on all of us.
Now, you know it'd be I who would do something like that,
Kingsley told him smoothly. I am quite sneaky, you know. One never knows what I might get up to. Beads of sweat appeared on Ron's forehead.
In fact, Kingsley intoned solemnly, some might even say I am sneaky as shit and cannot be trusted. Would you agree, Weasley?
No, sir, Ron blurted out desperately. Wouldn't agree with that.
Well, I'm awfully glad to hear it, Kingsley replied pleasantly. I wouldn't want anyone in the Order who didn't trust me.
Right, Ron squeaked in a high-pitched voice.
You'd be right about that.
He turned and gave Neville a deathly stare, and Neville looked quickly up at the ceiling. Look, he said loudly. Look at that big spider up there. Ron jumped nervously and began scanning the rafters, and Charlie and George snickered loudly.
Quit being a pussy, Ron!
Charlie yelled down the table. Ron shot Charlie, and then Neville, a venomous look.
Good try, he said threateningly to Neville. Just you wait!
Ignore him, Neville,
Luna said consolingly and patted her radish.
Here, touch this radish, you'll feel better.
Harry snorted rudely at this.
Sure.
Neville mumbled and haplessly patted the radish.
Can we get on with this?
Lupin demanded.
This is very important. These are the files of the...
Kingsley cut him off.
Speaking of files,
he told Lupin in a bored voice,
have you finished your oral reports yet?
What?
Lupin snapped.
Why are you bringing this up now? We're having a bloody order meeting. I'm merely wondering if you were finished, Kingsley said slowly. So that I can dump them right into the trash.
Lupin swung around and glared ferociously at Neville.
He made me tell him,
Neville mumbled hastily.
I certainly did not, Kingsley bellowed. You were spewing out information so fast it's a wonder your lips didn't light up like a torch.
Rub on it,
Luna whispered helpfully to Neville and indicated the radish again.
Kiss it. Harry snickered. Come on, Neville. That'll save your ass. I don't have any idea what you're on about,
Lupin told Kingsley with an offended expression.
Can we please get on with the meeting?
Of course you don't know what I'm talking about, he replied cordially. If you did, I might send you to an underground cave in Egypt. The one I have my secretary looking for as we speak.
I didn't mean it,
Lupin said hurriedly.
I was just whining. I find that most difficult to believe,
Kingsley replied in an extremely sarcastic tone.
Now, go on with your meeting. I do apologize for interrupting. I can be quite tiresome, you know. Boring, really.
Shacklebolt looked at Harry and Neville, heard an audible gulp.
I am so mind-numbingly tedious that at times I believe,
Kingsley barked out as his eyes drilled a hole straight through Harry's head,
one might wish Voldemort had killed them rather than have to listen to any more of it.
Harry scooted 4 feet back in his chair.
Give me that radish,
he said desperately to Luna.
No,
Luna replied spitefully.
You've offended her.
I'm going to get you,
Harry hissed venomously at Neville.
You wait till this meeting's over.
I didn't understand you, Neville replied immediately. You're speaking in parcel tongue.
No, he isn't,
Luna said in a bewildered voice.
He said he was going to get you after a meeting.
Neville looked back up at the ceiling.
I think we need to talk about all the goblins the Ministry's killing off,
Luna said heatedly.
Yes, the goblins,
Kingsley replied fiercely.
The goblins whose murder I'm assisting with because you saw some bloody blue cloud around your damn bed. It's probably from that god-awful incense you're constantly burning.
Neville, Luna said heatedly, that was really rude and sneaky of you. I'm going to help you get him,
she told Harry in an annoyed voice.
I know what he's scared of.
Neville did not like the sound of that. "And you needn't be angry with me," Luna told Kingsley irritably as she rubbed her radish furiously. "I didn't want that aura to come. Maybe you just don't know you're helping them," she added earnestly. "I guess that's what it is. You're probably signing their execution forms without reading them."
"I do not sign forms I've not read," Kingsley thundered, and everyone jumped. "In spite of what you and Remus Lupin may believe, I do know how to read."
"Well, they're still doing it. It's the MLE," Luna hollered out stubbornly and plopped her giant radish on the table with a bang. "The Death Eaters have given them a lot of money for those goblins' feet. They are."
Complete silence followed this announcement.
"Go ahead and investigate, then," Lupin said resignedly.
"What? It's total shite," George snapped. "It's a waste of time."
"Sometimes she's right," Lupin replied wearily. "Remember when she found out those mutant Cornish pixies were killing old folks at the home for their tired and worthless? Nobody believed her."
"I'll help you, Luna," Hagrid boomed out. "You're right. I've heard something about it myself."
"Excellent. Luna and Hagrid will make sure the goblins keep their feet. Now listen up," Lupin yelled. "These are the Death Eaters' files on us."
There was a moment of puzzled silence, and then the older members burst out into delighted shouts. "Excellent," Arthur shouted. "Excellent. No one's ever gotten these. How do you do it?" he said admiringly to Lupin.
"I have my ways," Lupin replied mysteriously.
"This is wicked," Charlie exclaimed excitedly. "Don't you get it?" he said impatiently to Ron, who was still glaring at Neville. "This is everything they know about us. We'll know exactly what they expect us to do. And
they don't know we have them,"
Lupin finished triumphantly.
"Ooh, that is good," Luna said happily. "It is, Ron. Read about what they've got down as your weaknesses. That's what they won't be expecting you to do."
Everyone started flipping madly through their files.
"I wonder what they'd have listed as my weakness,"
Shacklebolt yawned and looked over at Charlie.
"What do you say, Charlie?"
"I've no idea, sir," Charlie replied nervously.
"Can't say as you'd have any at all." "But I'm all teeth and no fangs," Kingsley replied artlessly. "Not a bit threatening. In fact, I'm sure you wouldn't mind taking me on after the meeting, would you? I do need the practice,"
he finished solemnly.
"Well, no, sir. I wouldn't want to do that at all," Charlie said frantically,
as Neville stared desperately up at the ceiling, as if something quite fascinating were hanging from the rafters.
"Are you certain of this?" Kingsley asked politely. "It will be off the record, of course. I'm quite happy to oblige."
"Oh, I'm certainly certain," Charlie stammered. "Sir, sometimes I joke about stuff, sir. You know, like George does," he added wildly.
"Don't get me in on this," George said pleasantly.
"What have you got on me, then?" he asked Shacklebolt cheerfully.
"Nothing, actually," Kingsley replied thoughtfully and gave George an approving look. "Thank you, George."
"No problem," George said amiably. "I like you. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be stupid enough to say shit to Neville," he announced to the group. "He's a great gossip. He's the biggest gossip in the order."
"No, I'm not," Neville mumbled quickly and wiped his forehead.
"I didn't say nothing to Neville,"
Mundungus broke in quickly as he took a swig from the bottle of ale in his cloak pocket.
"As to say, well, blimey, I didn't say nothing to anybody at all."
"That's because nobody wants to talk to you," Harry told him nastily.
"Are you still mad about him stealing that silver?" Ginny yelled out in a disgusted voice. "That was 9 years ago. Get over it."
"No, no," Arthur broke in reassuringly. "Let's not quarrel. We should be celebrating," he added happily. "And you've no need to be rude to Neville," he added in quite a different tone to George.
"Taking Neville's side against your own son?" Kingsley asked Arthur in a perplexed voice. "Playing favorites, perhaps?"
"What are you saying?" Arthur snapped out angrily. "You've been talking in riddles since we got here. Put us out on the table."
"Yes, please do," Lupin added heatedly. "I've got a meeting to run here." "Certainly I'll put it on the table," Kingsley said politely. "I'll say what I please, since I am the Minister of Magic, as well as a great, horrible bully. But of course I needn't shout all the time," he added wrathfully.
"I hate you, Neville!" Hermione squealed and flushed furiously.
I didn't. "And I meant to say that one should not play favorites," Kingsley proclaimed loudly and stared meaningfully at Arthur. "Such as I might do should my pretty blonde werewolf ask for something I won't give a balding middle-aged ginger,"
he boomed out, and several decorative items fell off the walls. George laughed so hard he toppled right off his chair.
"You call him your pretty blonde werewolf?" Jenny screeched with a revolted expression. "That is disgusting, even if you do have something for him," she added.
"Hurry," Arthur bellowed, his face bright red. "I didn't tell him," Harry shouted furiously. "It must be Neville." "What?" Arthur screamed incredulously. "Neville! Well, I never would have believed it!"
I mean,
"Who says I have something for him?" Kingsley roared at Ginny.
"Not me!" Neville yelled out desperately. "Not me! I didn't say that! I've never said that!"
"Yes, you have," Bill announced with a frightful smile. "You told me that at Lupin's birthday party. I asked if Kingsley was coming, and you said, 'You know he's going to come. He loves him. I think he's in love with him or something.' Yeah, I bet he is."
"Perhaps I believe he has a thing for me," Shacklebolt bellowed, "since I am an arrogant troll who believes he's better than anyone else."
He stared ominously at Ginny and pounded his fist on the massive oak table and promptly split it in half.
"Reparo. And he needn't break my table just because Neville can't keep his mouth shut," Lupin said crossly to Kingsley. "Can we please get on with the meeting?"
"Neville!"
Ginny screamed and leapt to her feet.
"How dare you! I'm gonna kill you!"
Neville made a desperate grab for the radish in Luna's arms, thinking he might use it as a shield from Ginny.
"Let go of my radish, Neville!" Luna squealed angrily. "She hates you now!"
"Well, I say!" Arthur bellowed furiously at Kingsley. "Well, I don't know what you're accusing me of! Don't think that I'm afraid of you! I remember when you were a great overgrown first year with an enormous head! An enormous head, I say!"
he told the rest of the group decisively.
"Much too big for his body! It was as large as that radish!"
"Holy shit,"
Lupin muttered and winced visibly.
"And I will deal with you after this meeting, Neville!"
Arthur hollered threateningly, and Neville shuddered. Kingsley jumped up, and his chair toppled to the floor with a crash.
"I'll meet you outside, Arthur!" he snarled in a deathly tone. "Look, both of you calm down," Lupin said hastily. "Please, the two senior members of the Order here. I can't have one of you killing the other one off. And you've been friends for years,"
he added desperately when neither looked convinced.
"Well, you know Arthur says things he doesn't mean when he's in temper," he told Kingsley frantically. "Please sit down. Your fellow Gryffindors, Arthur saved your life in the battle at Cambridge. Albus told us we were meant to live and die together," he shouted frenetically.
"Pulling out all the stops, aren't you?" George remarked cheerfully. "Maybe you should throw in that it's all Neville's fault."
He grinned over at Neville, who was attempting to slide himself beneath the table. Arthur and Kingsley sat down slowly, giving one another mutinous looks, and everyone sighed with relief. Apparently, however, Arthur simply had to have the last word.
"I'll say whatever I please, you great black baboon!" he shouted triumphantly.
"Dive!"
Lupin yelled wildly, and everyone except Arthur plunged straight under the table.
"Reducio!"
Kingsley screamed, and there was a deafening explosion, followed a moment later by the sound of him chuckling. When Lupin peered over the tabletop and broke out laughing, the other Order members, excluding Neville, who was quite content where he was, struggled back up into their seats. A 3-inch-tall Arthur Weasley was rushing about on the table in a frenzied circle, his face purple with anger.
"How dare you!"
he squeaked in the highest-pitched voice anyone had ever heard.
"How dare you! How came with my parent?"
He hurried along as fast as his tiny legs would carry him, until he reached Kingsley, and began hacking furiously at Shacklebolt's wrist with his minuscule sword.
"Don't!" Bill said warningly.
Ginny started giggling, and George let out a snort.
"Stop it, Ginny!" Ron told her sternly as he ducked his head, his shoulders shaking. "Dad's gonna kill us if we..."
"Shit!" George gasped out.
"Shit! It's fucking funny!"
He promptly fell over on the floor and started howling with laughter.
"Sorry, Arthur,"
Lupin choked out as he wiped tears from his eyes.
"Really, it's just... it's like that Booth Moody."
"This is excellent," George wheezed. "This is the best Order meeting we've ever had. We've got the Death Eaters files on us, and Dad's 3 inches tall and pissed as hell. Thanks, Neville."
"And speaking of your father," Kingsley announced coldly to Ginny, "he was the one who called Remus the pretty blonde werewolf. Not me. And I do not have a thing for him. I have better taste than that."
"Thanks a lot," Lupin replied irritably.
"What?"
Ginny shouted at Arthur, who was now dancing with rage on the tabletop.
"You called him a pretty blonde werewolf? That's even more disgusting. You're not even gay," she shrieked.
"Well, he isn't supposed to be gay," George whispered dramatically.
"Maybe he's got a few secrets we don't know about."
Dad! Bill and Charlie shouted with the gassed expressions.
Yeah, maybe he does, Ginny said heatedly. Are you bisexual or something? Did you hook up for him when you were his lieutenant?
Shit! George toppled over, laughing again.
Yeah,
I bet that's what it was, he said delightedly when he was able to speak. No wonder he didn't like Sirius. He was jealous because he wanted him in his own tent.
George!
Arthur squealed in his tiny piping voice.
I never thought I'd say this, but I'm going to kill every one of you children except for Percy!
Now that is low, Dad, George replied with a very injured expression. Even for you, low. Well, look how tall he is, Bill added nastily.
Honestly, Dad, Ginny squealed. Percy, you suck. Percy wouldn't mean nothing,
Arthur squeaked wrathfully. That's because Percy hasn't any sense of humor, Ron yelled angrily. It's funny, we can't help it.
I'm killing you first,
his father replied crossly. Hagrid chuckled and scooped him up in his head. Look at that. You're not as big as me, dumb Arthur.
I'm bigger than your private thingy,
Arthur screeched as he jumped up and down. Wow, even lower, George told Hagrid sympathetically.
Dad's really pissed.
Well, that's beyond the pale, Arthur, Hagrid shouted furiously. And I'll have you know my private thingy's bigger than George's arm.
He paused and peered under the table.
Ain't that right, Neville?
A horrified silence fell over the table. Can you just kill me now? Neville's muffled voice blurted out from beneath the table. Avada Kedavra, really quick. No one is going to kill you now, Kingsley told him sternly. Then we would miss the story of how it is that you've seen Hagrid's private thingy.
Well, it ain't like that, Hagrid yelled wrathfully. You all got filthy minds is what you got. We was in the bathtub together and that was all.
Oh my God, George shouted and began rolling around on the floor.
Shit, I'm gonna fucking piss myself.
It was my fault, Lupin said gloomily. During the blue moon, I apparated him into Hagrid's bathtub, when Hagrid was in it.
You didn't have to tell them that, Neville shouted furiously.
Well, I was trying to admit it was my fault, Lupin responded irately. And you're not very threatening when you're yelling at me from under the table, he added irritably. Get up here.
It is best that he told Neville, Luna said seriously. Would you rather they know that instead of thinking you were...
She paused, apparently searching for the right words.
Bum fighting,
Mundungus put in helpfully.
Getting up McQueen's mum!
Well, I guess Neville could shag Hagrid, but Hagrid couldn't shag him, George said gleefully.
It would kill him, wouldn't it?
He looked over at Kingsley for affirmation.
I can't imagine it would be pleasant,
Kingsley replied amiably.
That's disgusting, Hagrid roared.
Being gay, you mean? Kingsley asked politely.
No! People saying it wouldn't be pleasant for Neville if we was...
Hagrid stopped and turned scarlet.
I mean... If we was, not that we would, saying it wouldn't be pleasant. You're prejudiced against half-breeds, he snarled at Kingsley.
It's a compliment, George announced unrepentantly. I'm saying, obviously, it's really big, right? So it hurt his ass. So I'm saying that Hagrid's dick would hurt Neville's asshole.
I think this meeting is over, Lupin muttered. And thank you for ruining it, he snarled at Kingsley. We'll try again next week, and I expect everyone to have their files memorized, he shouted as the room began buzzing with conversation.
Next week, Harry said angrily. His file was three times the size of everyone else's.
I was merely passing along information, Kingsley told Lupin politely. You can thank Longbottom for ruining it.
And speaking of thanks, he put his broad face beneath the table and smiled serenely at Neville.
I need to thank you, Longbottom.
Holy crap, Neville thought frantically and tried to disapparate, but apparently was unable to concentrate since he didn't go anywhere. Kingsley straightened up and addressed the rest of the table.
Neville was quite solicitous of my welfare while we were at St. Mungo's today, he announced gravely. He was most concerned that I might see his ass or other things, which he informed me would certainly cause me to be terribly sexually frustrated.
Neville fell over in a dead faint.
When are we going to tell Neville?
Lupin demanded as soon as the others had apparated from the room.
Friday,
Kingsley replied calmly.
We'll tell them all. I don't like this any better than you do, but if he knows, he can't possibly not act differently towards her, and then she'll know. I need you welcome at the Romanian Ministry for at least 4 more days. You should be able to get everything we need by then. And she's passed every bit of misinformation I've given her straight back to Rookwood.
Kingsley apparently took Lupin's silence as evidence of acquiescence.
"And how is his royal majesty?" he asked him pleasantly.
"As aggravating as always," Lupin said cheerfully. "He's not altogether a bad fellow, though. Quite intelligent. I feel a bit sorry for him, really."
"Be very careful, Remus,"
Shacklebolt said thoughtfully, "before you go climbing into bed with the enemy."
"Must you put everything that way?" Lupin responded crossly. "Anyway, he isn't our enemy. He's helping us. He gave us those files for nothing."
"He gave those files to you," Kingsley said impassively, "not to us. And we still stand behind the freedom fighters who he kills off with impunity, whether they're active or not. That makes him our enemy, albeit a useful one at present."
"We're using him," Lupin responded angrily. "Is this what you're saying?"
Kingsley let out a very deep sigh.
"You are the only person I've ever known who could make friends with a dark vampire who lives in a castle surrounded by corpses."
"I don't know that I'd call him my friend."
"Oh, but you didn't deny it, did you?" Kingsley countered triumphantly. "You'll be sending him a Christmas present by the end of the year. I'll guarantee it."
"I will not," Lupin replied solemnly. "I'll wager you 500 galleons you will,"
Shacklebolt said pleasantly and got to his feet,
"wrapped up in a big shiny bow."
"You're on with that," Lupin told him with a satisfied air. "And when you give me those 500 galleons, Arthur's going to be pissed as hell and say that was his coaster money."
They both broke out laughing, and Kingsley picked up his hat.
"And you're not staying at his castle," Shacklebolt told Lupin sternly. "Who said I was?"
Lupin replied with a horrible scowl.
"Why would I want to have a guest room decked out like the Palace of Versailles and a dozen ass-kissing servants and gourmet food when I could be hiking a 20-mile round trip every day to sleep in a hole in the side of a rock?"
Kingsley glared at him.
"The reason the cave is so safe," he said irritably, "is because of the 10-mile anti-apparition zone around it. And quit whining. You like walking in the woods."
Lupin gave him an incredulous look.
"The woods? We're talking about the Carpathian Alps in January. It's fucking freezing up there. It takes me 2 hours to climb down and 3 hours to climb back up. Every damn day," he snarled. "And that cave is too bloody small. I can't stand it." "You are not staying in his castle," Shacklebolt roared. "Who said I was? Quit bellowing. You can wake up my children."
Kingsley shook his head in disgust and apparated out of the room. Neville woke to the familiar sound of an owl tapping on a window, and found he was lying at the foot of Lupin's stairs in his own pile of clothes. He staggered sleepily into the kitchen and was surprised to find the scroll was addressed to him.
"Neville, my secretary says you came back looking for me, but I had left early in the day. So I wish to talk with you, as I fear I may have offended you. Please come by my flat. It does not matter how late. Number 6, the Patronus Pines, 2345 West Ministry Lane, Cosmina."
Neville looked quickly at the clock. "It's only 10 after 10. That isn't even that late. This day's going to turn out good after all," he thought determinedly. "And I don't have to worry because I'm never nervous around her. This is excellent." He went outside so he could shout the address without waking Teddy and Annie.
"Read me some poetry,"
Elizabeth murmured in a sleepy voice when Lupin climbed in bed with her.
"I don't need to read any,"
he replied and pulled her up next to him.
"I heard something today that reminded me of you, so I put it to memory."
Elizabeth made a satisfied noise and nestled up with her head on his chest.
"Oh, Romaine, dear one, I love you. You who, like a queen reclining over the pool with heaven starred, you who gaze up from the water with such earnest, deep regard, oh, I see you wrapped in magic. Hear your murmur low and sweet, as you break the shallow water with your slender naked feet. See you thus amidst the ripples which the moon's pale beams engage, and the years seem but an instant, and each instant seems an age."
"That's beautiful," she said drowsily. "What is it?"
"It's from Mihai Eminescu's second sonnet."
"Who did you hear it from?"
"A very nasty dark vampire,"
Lupin whispered dramatically.
"You are being silly,"
Elizabeth told him sternly.
"No, I'm telling you the truth. A thoroughly cold-hearted and merciless vampire."
Whether she believed this or not, he did not know, because her eyes drifted shut and she fell asleep. He kissed her lightly on her lips, tasting tea and sugar and something else delicious he could never define. Her skin was warm against his cheek as he listened to the softness of her breathing and inhaled the scent of her skin.
"You fill up my senses."
This was the sentence he would choose, he thought, were he given only one, to express what he felt for her. Sight, sound, smell, hearing, taste, and that sixth sense, the animal instinct, to him as vivid as the others, that assured him with her he was safe and loved. The candles flickered cozily on the old yellow fireplace and danced bright shadows on the wall, and the sound of softly falling snow spattered soothingly against the window pane. He thought of Radu, entombed within the harshness of his macabre castle, bent somberly by the firelight, studying books that whispered things of life and light. Have a peaceful sleep, my friend.